Who am I talking to?
You're speaking to Send Dog from Cypress Hill.
What up? I'm sorry if I just yelled in your ear, bro. I'm really sorry about that.
It's all right.
I'm really excited to talk to you. I don't know if you're picking that up.
Just slightly, yeah. I could tell a little bit.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a portrait of Sendog from Cypress Hill. You might not know him by name, but you definitely know his music. Senen Reyes, also known as Sendog, is one of the founding members of the pioneering rap group Cypress Hill. Sendog was born in Cuba. His family fled to the United States from the communist revolution in Cuba in 1971. They settled in Southgate, Los Angeles, where he met childhood friends and the founding members of Cypress Hill, Be Real, DJ Muggs, and his brother, Mellow Man Ace. Growing up in Los Angeles, Sendog became affiliated with the Bloods. And after his bandmate and friend, Be Real, got shot, they decided to get out of the gang and they turned to music. But if you know Cypress Hill, you know their music differs from other West Coast hip-hop from the 80s and 90s, because Cypress Hill was less concerned with gang life and focused more on marijuana. They were the first all-Latino hip-hop group to have platinum and multi-platinum albums. Since the band exploded on the scene, members have taken up side passion projects. Sendog formed the heavy metal band Powerflow in 2016 and also makes frequent guest appearances on tracks for artists including D'Antwoord and Latin Bitman. Sendog joins me today to talk about Cypress Hill's legacy since they came out in the late 1980s and what he's doing in his career today. Sendog, thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So can you just give me the background of Sendog? Because you're a huge star. Everybody loves you. They see you performing. They see you rapping and doing everything. But I don't know how many people have actually sat down and said, well, so where did Sendog come from?
Yeah, I was born in Cuba in the mid-60s. I left there when I was seven and a half years old. So most of the memories I have are of my family and a couple of schoolyard fights that I did really good in. We lived in my grandmother's house, and there was a small house that's still there. You know, my cousins still live in it. It was all the family stuff without my dad, I think, because my dad was he was incarcerated for not being down, you know, to teach, you know, his students communism and stuff. I think I remember my dad for the first time. Like, actually, it was the day that we got our paperwork to leave Cuba. And that was that. You know, my dad got out of prison. And the next thing you know, the next day, we were on a flight to Miami. It was that quick. And not really realizing that I wasn't coming back. I think in the back of my head, I was always thinking, you know, we're going to come back. We're just going somewhere for a little while. But I didn't really learn everything that my parents went through until we got to the United States.
So you end up leaving Cuba, you stop off first in Miami, and your family basically says, we need to get away from all the Cubans in Miami. It just feels like another version of a different kind of Cuba. And you guys actually pick up and move clear across the country to Southgate, Los Angeles. And a lot of people don't realize there's actually like a thriving Cuban-American community in South L.A.
Yeah.
So you end up meeting other Cuban-Americans at the high school, and you actually meet Dave Lombardo from the group Slayer, and he has a huge impact on you.
The Cypress-Slayer connection was very, very important. A lot of people don't know that Slayer and Cypress are pretty much like from the same neighborhood. So in 10th grade, I met Dave Lombardo. We had the same science class. And he told me one day, he goes, hey, my band's going to play here at lunchtime on Friday. Dude, come down and check us out. I'm like, oh, okay. So I went down there and I checked it out. So I went home that day, and shortly after that, I was thinking, like, you know, I think this guy's going to be big time one day with his band. And, you know, I think, what if I get into music? Or just started, you know, questioning that thought around my head. And I was like, you know, Run DMC was just starting to come out with their song, you know, It's Like That. And that's the way it is. So I kind of like lynched onto that. And I just started writing my own little raps by myself, you know, at 16, 17. But I think that watching Slayer that day at lunch, it made a profound decision that way, that young, to start like an actual whole rap group. So that whole thing, that whole meeting David, was definitely something that changed my whole life.
So was this encounter with Dave Lombardo what you think made the Cypress Hill sound so unique? Because basically you were introduced to rock, you had metal, you had other kinds of musical genres. And did you feel that way? Kind of like, yeah, music is borderless.
Yeah, definitely. Because I was the type of guy that I always had friends in many circles. So I could hang out, you know, with the brothers and listen to all the, you know, the R&B and the soul music. Then I could hang out, you know, with my skater buddies. And they'd play, you know, Kiss and Van Halen and Black Sabbath and all that stuff. You know, and go home and my mom and dad are playing Tito Puente, Celia Cruz and Oqueta Aragon, and my older sister's playing Donna Summer and the Bee Gees. And and I got to experience listening to Iron Maiden and Judas Priest and all that stuff through my heavy metal bros. Breaking the law. At the same time, cats were playing, you know, Parliament Funkadelic and Cameo. It was just, music was everywhere. And I'm glad it was like that, because it made me like a wide open thinker musically.
So take me to 1988. By this time, you actually had become involved with gangs. You were one of the Bloods. Things take a pretty dark turn when your friend Be Real is shot. And I'm wondering, what kind of a turning point was that in your life?
You know, Be getting shot, you know, we saw a bigger picture after Be Real shooting. You know, certain guys thought that we were just all about that. We were never going to do anything else but that. So it kind of left me and Be Real like on the block, like, you know, what are we going to do? You know, we had to actually pull ourselves out of the gang culture. And, you know, we were clear, you know, in our what we were saying. We're like, well, let's start a group, me and you then. We're like, what are we going to call it? I was just like, well, let's call it after the neighborhood, you know, Cypress Hill, call it after the block. Cypress Hill, come on and ride with us. And that was the beginning of that. Muggs got to sending us beats and stuff from New York. You know, he sent cassettes in the mail to my house and we'd rap over them. And he said, look, here's the plan for you guys, okay? He goes, I want you guys to be like the Cheech and Chong of rap.
This is dedicated to all the weed growers across the universe. Would you like that prescription?
So as a matter of fact, that actually leads me into my next question, because the truth is that you guys, Cypress Hill, you guys were super ahead of the curve in terms of rapping about marijuana. The rumor goes that you even changed Dr. Dre's stance on rapping about marijuana. You even said that rapping about murder and violence was okay, but not smoking weed. What was going on back then? I mean, clearly, y'all were smoking a lot of joints, but you were also saying it's not just about smoking a joint and getting high and, you know, getting creative. It's actually about, it's about making a statement. Or maybe I'm wrong. Was it about making a statement?
Yeah, definitely. It was about making a statement. I grew up in a, you know, in the stoner environment, and I had a friend in Southgate. His mom and dad were cool. We smoked weed at their house. It was like no big deal. But we had to listen to them talk to us all this marijuana talk and stuff. And the dad would be like, you guys don't even know what you're smoking. This plant could change the world, man. And
whoa.
This could help sick people.
Whoa.
This could help the environment. And I'm 16 at the time. I'm like, what is an environment? You know? So, but sure enough, everything that those old hippies said to us, man, is coming to pass. It's true.
It's coming to pass.
And I think, you know, that kind of like made us, you know, real, real stoner people, like buy High Times every month when it came out, read it front to back, you know, growing techniques, the best seeds, where are they coming from and all that stuff. We became those guys, you know, so it's not an act.
So you guys, you form your rap group. You're all Latinos, mostly Cuban, yeah. Cuban, Mexican. Mm-hmm. But you guys basically make a decision that you don't want to be pigeonholed into being a quote-unquote Latino band. You've said that you didn't want to, quote, shove it down people's throats.
Yeah.
What were you thinking about? What was the conversation about Latino identity at that time? And how are you kind of managing those decisions?
Well, just based on what our friends were doing in the field, we were hanging around with Kid Frost, and he was, you know, the Chicano dude.
This is for the raza.
Mellow Man Ace was the, you know, the Cuban guy with the cigar. You know, Buya Tribe was, you know, the big swole Samoan dudes, and they're Samoan, and boom, you know what I mean? And everybody was just standing up for their race, and that was like a big part of what they did on stage and in music. And with us, we didn't want to do that. We just wanted to be a good rap group despite, you know, what race or, you know, whatever we are. And I felt that if we were going to be bigger than what I called the lowrider circuit, because that's what all those guys were performing at. And I was like, if we're going to be bigger than that, then we need to, you know, portray ourselves as something else. Mm. We wanted further respect than that. Race is important to us, but you could tell that who we are, what we are, by just looking at us, you could tell we're Latino kids. So that's good enough right there, you know?
You do rap in Spanish. You do have a Spanish album.
Yeah, and the Spanish album, we did that down the line after there was success already for the band. And, you know, we had heard from some of our fans here and there, that people that met us, like, you guys need to do something in Spanish, man, for the raza. And, you know, we gave it some thought, and we're like, all right. But we covered our own songs. We didn't do original concept songs. I thought we should have did original concept songs, but that album went over well. I think it did gold, you know, in the United States or whatever, or around the world. So you can't be said that, you know, we completely ignore who we are, our heritage, or anything like that. But we did it at the right time, I felt. You know, we had got our respect the way we wanted to get. And people down there in the South Americas and in Mexico and a lot of the places here in America were heavy Latino influence. So it did well. It did well, and you know, and then we moved on from there and went back to doing what we do. So I just killed a man. Here is something you can't understand. Or I could just kill a
man. Here is something you can't understand. Or I could just kill a man. Coming up on Latino USA, Sendog talks about the troubles that come with rising fame.
That whole thing could have really went off like dynamite. You know, I'm thankful that it didn't. There was never no incidents, no violence ever occurred.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
No matter what you've got planned, you need a song of the summer. This week on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we are rounding up experts from NPR Music. We will play a ton of songs to lift your spirits, and you might even find your next favorite artist. That's NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Listen and subscribe now.
Hey, we're back, and I continue now with my conversation with Cypress Hill's Sendog. in the 90s, Cypress Hill, this is like your moment. The peak of your career, like from the mid-90s to late 2000s, you're collaborating with artists like Wu-Tang Clan, Mobb Deep, Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg,
Cypress Hills, DPG, Snoop
the Marleys, Pitbull, and Mark Anthony. Legends in music history. And I keep thinking back to you just like being, you know, in your little neighborhood, like, okay, well, I can't really pop and rock, but maybe I could do this. How are you processing not just the fame, but the fact that you had this level of impact?
I mean, the way I processed it was like, if you're everything that they say about you is true, then you should be able to open up some doors for people behind you. And I felt that we did that. You know, we opened up doors and, you know, behind us came some really good talent. You've seen a lot more like Latino hip hop coming out. And it made me feel good to know that we did our role as pioneers or just role models or whatever. You know, guys that opened the door and like, you know, check out the kids behind us. You know, they got talent too.
So those are the high points. But there's this thing that happens in the mid-1990s. Cypress Hill and NWA rapper Ice Cube mm-hmm. get into beef. There's yeah. accusations of people stealing rhymes. What happened with Ice Cube ended up creating a rift between black and brown folks in L.A.
It created a lot of a split here in L.A. between black and brown, you know.
Concern began to grow that the beef might pit neighborhoods, gangs, and races against each other.
It can happen at any right. minute. Right. It can ignite.
You're a Latin in the house. If you're a puro Latino in the house.
What was it like to know that, so you were having this, you know, musical beef, and suddenly it became something that was like, black versus brown?
Well, you know, that whole thing could have really went off like dynamite. You know, I'm thankful that it didn't. There was never no incidents, no violence ever occurred, which could have easily happened. Up to that point, I don't think people remember how tight Cypress and Cube were. Everywhere that he went, we went. So we were doing a lot for the black and brown movement together. People saw us together and it was good for that, you know? And then that happened and it kind of like, you know, set things back a little bit. At the same time, I understood that there was like, you know, tensions there growing and whatnot. And certain radio personalities were helping push that along. And we're good with Ice Cube again. We have been cool with him for a number of years.
That's great. So you remain extraordinarily creative. You have a new project. It's a metal group called Power Flow.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with any kind of yoga. It's kind of the opposite. You started it in 2017. You're the front man. And I want to talk about one particular song, Crushing That. You say, I don't mind being the one that's slept on, but I will never be the doormat that you step on.
I don't mind being the one that slept on, but I will never be the doormat that you step on.
There's been talk that was kind of you talking about maybe your days with Cypress Hill and that maybe you weren't getting all the attention that you thought you deserved.
No, that had nothing to do with anything to do with Cypress Hill. That song, Crushing That, basically is about rising above and being a positive-minded person with goals and self-respect and dignity. So that doesn't have anything to do with Cypress. That's just more of a way of life. You know what I mean? That people have to pick up themselves and have respect for themselves and not let anybody, you know, do them in a disrespectful manner. Yeah.
I totally got that feeling from that. I felt like what you were saying, and I was writing my notes in Spanish, and I felt like you were saying, no te agaches, mm-hmm. you know, respect yeah. yourself. And it was like the opposite of humility. You know, so many Latinos and Latinas in this particular case, somos muy humildes, right? And I felt like this yeah. was your song saying, no, levántate, you know, own your power.
Yeah.
I felt it was really, really beautiful.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So Cypress Hill just released their first album in 8 years. It's Elephants on Acid. I also loved it. This is you back with Be Real, DJ Muggs. Elephants on Acid, I think you guys said the idea was we want to make you feel like you're on this crazy trip. So the particular cut that I love, Band of Gypsies, mm-hmm. is like you with a bunch of Arab guys. And they're also just sitting around smoking pot and dropping raps and like having a great time on the other side of the world.
You're looking at the last of a dying breed. Weed it up, please speed it up. Sitting in the Cali sun, heat it up. Indoor, needle up. Rock and style, don't cheat, don't up. I put the beer of God in.
So tell me a little bit more about that. I love the song, by the way.
Thank you. That song, Band of Gypsies, came through when DJ Muggs went to Egypt to record, just to vibe out on the scene out there. Muggs goes over there and he finds a vibe. And, you know, he lived with those guys, he smoked with those guys, and he captured that vibe and brought it back. And he's like, I want you guys to, you know, rap on this. When we put the record out, people were like, well, what's going on? It's like with this Arab sound and whatnot. And it's basically Egyptian, and they're singing the praises of hashish in their song, in their music.
You guys don't have a lot of videos that feel really exploitative of women, which was really a big thing, like in the 90s and 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a conscious choice as a group to say we're not going to do that? Or was it just like, hey, this is who we are and this is what we do when we're together?
It was conscious. At the same time, it was like a, you know, organic thing. We didn't feel like we had to be, you know, talking about girls' butts and stuff or anything like that, anything to do with chicks. You know, we're the stoner crew. You know, that's who we were. I think we were more concerned about being those alley cat, burning a fire to trash can, drinking 40s, passing the blunt. You know what I mean? That's more who we wanted to be. It had nothing to do with chicks. We even thought that girls weren't going to like our music because it was too underground, and we were wrong about that. So I'm kind of glad we didn't go that route because, you know, we would have alienated, you know, our female audience.
Before I let you go, just one last question, Sendog. What was it like to be back together touring?
Well, that's the one thing that people, you know, because you don't put out an album in 8 years, people think like, you know, you're not a band anymore and you're not together anymore. We were still doing sellout dates around the world. We were like selling out stadiums and stuff and venues, you know, left and right. And it just goes to show you the power of the Cypress Hill, you know, army, the fans, that they don't need a brand new record to come see us. They proved it for 8 years in a row. They took coming out, you know, hey, when's the new album coming out? Oh, it'll be out soon. Okay, cool. We'll have a good show. That's what they were, you know, they came to have a good time with the band, you know, but we never lost the support of our public, our fans. It was incredible to go places, you know, 5-6 years without an album and still selling out, you know, stadiums around the world. It was kind of crazy, actually. So you want to be a rock superstar and live long.
Sendog, you have been an extraordinary, important, creative force in the music of this country. And I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done, Sendog, and everything that you've done with Cypress Hill. Thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA.
It's been my pleasure to be here with you on Latino USA, and thank you for the kind words. Cypress Hill forever.
Sendog and Cypress Hill recently received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. This episode was produced by Maggie Freeling and edited by Marlon Bishop and Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizaca, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoca, and Sayer Quevedo. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our interns are Lucas Southard and Jonathan Cabral. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
I gotta get some props with my kids, you know, because I'm like, hey! I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, Luna Lauren Velez. You know of her as Captain Maria La Huerta on Dexter. We sit down for an intimate conversation about her childhood and how she brings strong Latina characters to life. That's next time on Latino USA.